These. Okay. So this karmic, this golden chain binds all of our humanity into one family, she says, which is interesting to consider that this four links of the golden chain binds our humanity into one family. And that to realize that we are tuning our nature to that universal one life, and that we are brothers and sisters to all of nature and to all nations. Now, what are these four golden chain links in this chain? Well, they are one, universal unity and causation. Two, human solidarity. And the other two we're very familiar with, but maybe not aware of them in regards to the idea of human solidarity, but the law of karma, and the fourth one is the law of reincarnation. And these are the four links in the golden chain. And to be aware of that, in every thought, word, and deed, we could consider and look at that as well. That these four things are what bind us together as a humanity. So, in other words, it's not just your karma or my karma or my reincarnation and your reincarnation. It becomes in this idea of human solidarity, we are all working together to evolve our humanity and nature. We're not doing it separately. That's an illusion. It may appear like we're doing it separately on this plane, but if we could get behind the scenes to the plane of causation, we'd begin to see that there's this great matrix that we're all working on together, weaving together the whole planetary experience, and that there is no separateness in that regard. So I thought that was very interesting to consider the four links of this golden chain that bind us all into one humanity, one family, which is very interesting. So we hope that everyone got a copy of the article from the Theosophical Movement from 2012 on How Aware Are We? Because we would like to read some of that together. I think it's important. It begins with looking at the life and work of Leonardo da Vinci. And he, one of his quotes is, "The average human looks without seeing, listens without hearing, touches without feeling, eats without tasting, moves without physical awareness, inhales without awareness of odor or fragrance, and talks without thinking." So we would like to take a few moments to consider what Leonardo da Vinci was indicating to us, and how do we become more aware? Theosophy Hall.
Well, what we thought was like in the voice of the silence, woe for the living dead, that they really are to be pitied. And not to say that we're advanced ourselves and at all, or it's not a put down in any way. It's more of a helpless pity for those that are just going through life blind. Just reacting all the time, not really thinking, just reacting, and so that's our contribution.
Well, that's very good and very helpful because we learn from those who are less aware than ourselves just as much as we learn from those who are more aware. And an example of that, noticing that the young children coming in from outside and taking off their coats and boots and hats and mitts and scarves and everything here in the north, and they just plunk them on the ground. They're completely unaware of what they're doing. They're just anxious to get on to the hot chocolate and the marshmallows. And so they just drop that. And going after them and picking up after them, as every mother has to do. One of the thoughts that we can consider is in regards to the great teachers and what they are trying to share with us. How unaware are we? You know, are we aware in by degree? So as what was indicated is that we all are at different levels of awareness, and we can see that in that regard, we in our idea of human solidarity, that we have to hold a candle for those who, as Theosophy Hall indicated, we have to hold a candle for those who are less aware than ourselves. That we're all links in that chain of humanity. And it's very painful to be aware in a room full of people or in a world full of people who are not aware. That is a very painful position to be in. But that's one of the hazards of being aware. So TK and then SL. Unmute, please, TK.
You know, interestingly enough, we understand what he's saying, but a theosophist can look at this and say, okay, he's listening without hearing, touching without feeling, eating without tasting, and get the idea, well, that's great. He's not being distracted by the senses. He's getting done what he needs to get done and not getting involved in the outer world. And all that applies, except for the talks without thinking, of course, not that. But we understand where he's coming from, but we just thought just a point of interest.
Thank you. No, that is true. Are we, but you know, to be able to control them, manage the senses, doesn't mean not being aware of them. That's a question we might ask. SL?
Well, it seems that if we took Leonardo's comments too literally, the result of it, we might just be better connoisseurs of our senses. We might get a better appreciation of different flavors of apples, the different, or if we're a gardener, the different smells and odors of various flowers, and be better able to distinguish them as a botanist, let's say. But we could also look at it is what he's really saying here is to every experience, even the sensory ones, to bring all our faculties of mind to that experience. Most importantly, our ability to concentrate, to move all distractions out of our consideration except for that. And as you were suggesting, to meditate on the experience, even as a sensory one, in the light of these golden links.
Yes.
What do we see of the lessons of karma or re-embodiment or universal unity or causation as we observe all these phenomena through our physical senses? And that's why we have the senses, in order to gain experience from our life here and learn the lessons.
Thank you. Are there any other comments on this idea before we go into the article? Just a moment. Yes, MDW.
When we come upon the subject, we often just sort of fall back and look at how we have to maneuver through life. And there's like there's wisdom that's given us, you know, these virtues are something that create a vibration in us, you know, that vibration of love. Now we unfortunately interpret that in many ways, but the highest form of love is that you have tolerance of everyone. Okay, and then you're always trying to find harmony, you know, and then, you know, and being patient. And at this point of our evolution, being indifferent, finding where the pairs of opposites are. So, you know, I think from the understanding is once those virtues are conquered, or I shouldn't say conquered, become a part of our being, all the other virtues open up. The energy in everything, because we have a purposeful life.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Any further thoughts on that? JB.
Yes, so we started the discussion talking about awareness of like theosophical ideas or concepts, being aware of karma. And the article seems to focus on sense awareness. Would you think that it's like a prerequisite for us to be more aware of our own senses and thoughts before we can become aware of theosophical ideas?
So I think absolutely that we, Mr. Judge says that this evolution has to be done while in a body. And being in a body means that we have these senses and we're in touch with nature and there's something to be learned from them. Absolutely. But one of the things that we've forgotten is that the beginning of the Voice of the Silence, where it says, we have to learn to discern the real from the unreal. So, what could we think of that idea in regards to the senses? Because what we experience through the senses is constantly changing. And karma is constantly bringing things to us and taking things away from us. So, where do we place our, I think that came out in another comment, is that we have to be grounded in a feeling of a solid feeling of awareness. Because if we, the voice of the silence says, if we do not use these senses, they will use us. And most of the times they are using us through the personality rather than we using them for a what the Bhagavad Gita would call a feeling of devotion. SL.
Yes, it's more just a follow-up to the comment just made. If being acutely aware of the senses is so important at the beginning, why does the voices of silence tell us to mistrust our senses? They are false.
Anyone have a thought on that? Theosophy Hall?
Well, we wonder if the fact that the voice talks about, you know, don't trust your senses, they are false. We wonder if that is how can we put it? That it's a way that we can learn our lessons because we know that the physical form of which the senses are a part of, it is through the physical form that we are using it to learn the lessons that are coming to us from karma. So, could it be then that the senses that we need to acknowledge them at least? Because they, in a way, they are our teachers.
Thank you. It seemed what comes from that is this idea that the problem isn't that we shouldn't trust our senses so much as we don't need to take our identity from those senses. That if we are taking our, if we think I'm tired, I'm hungry, I'm upset, I am, and we're taking our identity from those senses. But if we can look at them and say, I'm experiencing a feeling of tiredness. What is that caused by? It could be caused by many things. It could be caused by weariness in life. It could be caused by not getting enough sleep or you're not well. So the senses is bringing you a feeling, but the cause of that feeling could be many, manyfold. And come from different directions. So, in order to understand the senses, one has to not be identified with them. So, that might be one of the things about killing out the senses that's important, is not taking our identity from them. JCS.
What just came to mind is that we have a language problem. In English, we say, I am hungry, I am tired. In French, it's I have hunger. Not I am, but j'ai, I have this. And so a lot of our awareness and the exercise of detachment is to be very aware of the language we're using.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other thoughts on this idea? Let's get into the article. We won't read about the his life there and his examples, but let's go into what the student brought forward in the article from 2012. The student mentions on the first page that was in the handout, we at the bottom. We all have the great potential for observing, learning, and creating. And yet we have made ourselves self-limited, even in the most natural habit of becoming aware and observing the self and others. Besides, there is no object of awareness more important than the contents of our own mind through the flow of ideas and images. That are a constant background of our existence. We rarely make a sincere effort at knowing ourselves as we truly are. Would we have a volunteer to read the next three paragraphs? TK, thank you.
Do we ever catch ourselves and quietly notice the movements of the mind and the quality of our consciousness? Not a moment can a man be without his familiar activity, loosely calling it thinking. But in reality, this is not thinking as such, for we may just be absent-mindedly letting things pass by, like humming the tune in the background. Sometimes we may be vaguely reacting to the passing shows, inner and outer, without producing an actual thought pattern with a meaning and direction. It is just as if one daily walks on one's familiar street automatically and by the force of habit. Only when we take up the idea. Oh, only when we take up the idea which has a definite form and object that we are really thinking to some purpose. Awareness as a technique begins with being silent, or rather relaxed, and watching the thoughts and impulses that may arise and making a note or a record. We may notice that besides the thought forms, there may be fleeting reactions. Impulses, feelings, motives, etc., but we are not at present to add anything to them. We are here just to watch and just be aware. This exercise is an excellent aid to the more important discipline of self-examination in the time set apart during the day. For many, this simple thing as deliberate awareness is quite unfamiliar. Those of us who value the guidance of higher nature and are concerned with true inner needs may sadly discover our occasional failures to detect some valuable lessons and some good things that happen to us, all due to the lack of awareness. Due to the lack of awareness and careless habits, we may fail even to acknowledge with gratitude some providential help received or even the advantages of life we enjoy every day. At times, an opportunity knocks at the door, and we do not attend or fail to recognize the auspicious visitor and perhaps a messenger. For instance, we might dismiss as fancy a dream intimation. There are life's insignificant looking experiences which could well be our tests if our patience or endurance or forgiveness or willingness to listen to others. For instance, our teacher or a friend may firmly scold us, and this may prove to be an actual benediction if we could accept the whole unpleasant episode in the true spirit of discipleship and its obligations. There are many such unexpected blessings in life which we may have allowed to pass. If we are truly aware, we should be a little more alert to the inner voice of warning or a timely reminder or a wholesome inspiration to do the right things. Keep going.
Another at the end of my paragraph here, it says a man of the world may be habitually much
Preoccupied.
preoccupied with his familiar ground and constant chatter of his personal nature. He may even gradually become indifferent to the presence and the feelings of others. Such a soul lethargy makes one cold and dry, an egotist with a very narrow perspective of life and its objects. Did yours end that way?
Actually, we have that in the next paragraph, so
Oh,
who
okay.
knows?
Sorry. Yeah, all paragraphs are different. So, what do we think there then? What comes to mind? SL?
Well, this is a very critical, these are very critical paragraphs. Up until this point, we might get the idea that the practice of increasing our awareness is primarily for our own spiritual benefit, how far we advance. But the point is that as we become more aware through the practice of awareness and become less automatic or more ourselves, we have at the same time to use that ability to become more compassionate. And by this is meant that we may do things and expect that people in our family, our nation, our race, our everyday contacts will naturally react in a certain way. And when they don't, we get very disappointed with them. Or maybe even worse, we get angry and resentful because how could they not? And this makes the point that more often than not, people do these things because they are functioning automatically. They are not entirely aware of what they are doing or what they should be doing because their mind is taken up with so many other things. So there's a trap, there's a double-edged sword here. As we become more aware, we have to become more tolerant of the fact that most, if not many people around us are not practicing this self-awareness and are going to make mistakes. Not that we don't, but they're going to make some mistakes.
Thank you. That goes right back to the first comment made in Theosophy Hall, you know, that, and it also indicates something of the changes our relationship to the pledge of the Kuan Yin pledge, you know, never shall we seek nor receive private individual salvation, but forever and everywhere in all times, will strive for the redemption of every creature under the sun. So this is a long-term pledge. This is not even to do with this particular Manvantara or this particular lifetime. And to have patience, we have to let go of our expectations of the way we think things should be. And we have to just begin to look at things the way they are. And this is that awareness, I think, that Leonardo da Vinci is talking about, just looking at things as they present themselves to us and realizing the power behind it and acting from that inner position through the senses, not with the senses, but through the senses. Is there any other comment or thought on this? Jerry, go ahead.
Another thing that comes up in this topic is the fact that we live in an allegorical universe. Everything around us, everything in nature is a symbol, an allegory, a correspondence to something that's deeper and that's spiritual. So I think as Theosophists, what we're trying to do is elevate whatever it is that's happening, whatever it is we're observing, whatever is going on in the world has a deeper antecedent. So the Theosophists, if they're, you know, thinking and thoughtful and questioning and perceptive, should be able to elevate every situation with the universal principles that stand behind life. So the senses are not enemies. They're just tools. And our job is not to use them passively, but to use them actively, seems to me.
And nature and man evolved together, and the senses being part of nature and it are very important for us to understand. SL and then MDW.
Just to follow up on that. So we understand that as thinkers, we can operate on different planes of being, but it's always the same thinker. But on each of those planes, it thinks differently. We've been told that in the devachanic state, the thinker begins to act or think in a different way. So then key to raising our awareness to another level is, as was pointed out, to change the way we think. So we can be functioning on this plane and yet raise our consciousness to another one by just changing the way we think. And that's why we're given these fundamental principles or universal principles, so that we can begin to climb this ladder of thought.
Thank you very much. Thank you. MDW, would you like to add to that?
It follows along with the virtues. We have to form a detachment or an indifference, and not that we're not involved in life, but we have to be detached from it and not be attached to the coming events and the leaving of events and be in the moment. But it goes back to the virtues, harmony and patience, compassion. So that has to be our foundation for looking at everything.
Thank you. Thank you. SL.
Just to alert that we do have a chat.
Oh.
If you can't see it, we'd be happy to read it for you.
The mind is the great slayer of the real. What does this mean? Please elaborate. Okay. We all know that the mind has the power to carry us off a captive slave. It's described in the Voice of the Silence like a mad elephant in the forest at times. It can slay the real. What is the real that is being slain? Ask a question with a question. Answer a question with a question. What is real? Is it that which never changes? Does the mind change? Yes, the mind is constantly changing. And so the mind that is constantly changing can cover up the real. And we forget. And we could think of it in terms of simple one, that we love our family, but they are irritating us. That's the unreal right there, because our the irritation is based upon our likes and dislikes, which is constantly changing. And so then the real gets lost. The love, the harmony gets destroyed by the changing. So that's one way, simple way of looking at it. The mind is the slayer of what is real. SL and then TK.
Yes, that's certainly a good standard. But what seems to us to be the real at this point may not be unreal. Maybe turn out to be unreal at another point. And HPB says in The Secret Doctrine that our whole progress is moving from one idea of what is real to a higher one or another one. Even there, where we are, acknowledging that it may be replaced by a higher understanding. How do we determine what's real to us now, even relatively?
Sorry. Have an answer to that question. How do we determine? That's another question. TK.
With my original question, or as an answer to
Oh, no, you, both if you can. But
that?
go ahead with your original.
Well, of course, as we all know, we would bring the three fundamentals into it and it just test it for the universality of application, test it to see if it works on different planes, emotionally, intellectually, for all people, men and so things like this. We're all aware of that. But this the mind is the slayer of the real, let the disciple slay the slayer. Well, if the disciple is a human being, and a human being is a mind being. The mind is the slayer of the real. Let the disciple slay the slayer. Then is the disciple more than just a mind being?
Is the disciple more than just a mind being?
If he's slaying the slayer, and the slayer, the mind is the slayer of the real.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We exist beyond the mind. We are the power to change the mind, the power to grow the mind, the power to direct the mind. That is what we are. Jerry.
Yeah, that is a very seminal statement that we all have thought about a lot. The mind is the great slayer of the real. One thing that was pointed out to me years ago was that this comment comes out of a Tibetan Buddhist tradition. And in that tradition, when they speak of the mind in this sense, they're talking about what we in Theosophy would call the lower mind. This is not the higher mind. This is kama manas. This is mind that's trapped in the world of senses, like we were talking about earlier. So the problem is that the mind, the lower mind sees things as separate. The lower mind sees things without their causal spiritual background, you might say. So that has to be overcome. We have to overcome that. We have to see that the integrity of nature, the connections, the commonality, the solidarity component, that is overcome through philosophy, what we call philosophy, which is trying to look behind things, try to look at the causes of things, trying to, like we were talking about before, about the universal principles that lie within nature. This is the effort of the student, is to kind of to dig themselves out of the separateness problem and see that connectedness. So I think that's an important point to add to the conversation about this. mind being the great slayer of the real. Because what the lower mind is doing is it's dragging one away from the unity universe, the unity principle, the connected principle. It sees things as separate. And that is that has to be overcome through an effort.
Thank you. So,
I don't think he heard you.
SL?
SL, did you hear me? Go ahead. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yes, so to extend that idea, going back to our relative reality, the difference is as we grow in awareness, what we thought initially or at some point was separate, we now realize to be interconnected. And as we grow in our awareness, we see more and more of life that's interconnected, or as we say it, universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. But even that, we only understand in a very small way. And as we grow, that awareness, that application, those interconnections becomes more part of our knowledge.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, it's important that we, as HBB said in the links of the golden chain, the four of them, the first one was human solidarity and causation, is that we are all in this all together. We're not separate. Our karma and our reincarnations are a part of a process that we as a humanity are going through together, not separately. And that's really important. Even it's no, we get to impersonality, which is that it's not my karma or your lower nature anymore. It's our lower nature. It's our karma. There's a solidarity there. There's a process that we're all going through together, you know. And one of our favorite songs in that regard is The Rainbow Connection. You know, or maybe even the Whitman's poetry, where he shows the human solidarity, the fact that we're working together, in Emerson and his writings, as well as Bellamy and his, that human solidarity. And so, you know, we cannot go evolve past the weakest link. We're all going to have to evolve together. And that includes the people who are less aware than ourselves. And so by incarnating with people who are less aware than us, we can cultivate our own awareness. We can cultivate our own virtues. And we can use that to help those who are less aware than us and use it to help those who are more aware than us. By being a link in that chain of human solidarity, that, and as even Jane Goodall said, every being is important in this chain. Every being, she said, where they might not realize their special task or their importance. It might take them a while to realize it, but they all are important. Even the ones that are giving us the most trouble right now. Maybe especially those who are giving us the most trouble right now. Well, should we read just a little bit more before we close tonight? We'll start on the paragraph or the sentence that says, but for a student who has higher aspirations. And we'll read over to the end. Do we have a volunteer? We'll finish part one. Okay, Theosophy Hall, thank you.
But for a student who has higher aspirations, such failure to heed matters that happen to him disqualifies him for greater responsibility that may be entrusted to him someday. There is a Persian saying, do little things now, so shall great things come to thee, asking to be done.
But it all begins with awareness of one's own inner stuff and one's place in the scheme of things. Awareness skills are important steps in mental discipline, but also a part of character development. There is a Zen Buddhist story which shows the value of being attentive to small matters. A seeker went to the Zen master known for his teachings on meditation in order to become his pupil. The first thing that the teacher asked him was where and in what position he had placed his slippers outside the room. The pupil had not taken note of such petty matters. The teacher then told him that one of the first steps for the meditation skill is to be a good observer of one's own movements and things around. Every little thing must be done with deliberation and awareness. The seeker was asked to return after some period when he would feel ready for further instructions. To respond ethically and aesthetically to all conditions of human life is the natural function of our egoic consciousness. Therefore, if there are any moral or psychic inadequacies, it means poor cultivation of aesthetic and ethical awareness. Indifference and insensitivity are signs not just of unrefined taste, but also of the untrained faculties of the higher mind. We might regard it as the failure of education to awaken the appreciative faculty and the pursuit of truth, goodness, and beauty. Training and self-awareness becomes an aid to increase the power of concentration, mindfulness, and the refinement of thought-feeling motivation complex. In case of Leonardo da Vinci, it is this simple but regular habit of ever wakeful awareness, his heightened power of observation, and the ever curious inquiring mind that led to certain insights and truth concerning the physical and philosophical questions. Although Da Vinci was not conventionally religious, he had the insight and the streaks of the mystical in his approach to life and his creative arts, which may be largely attributed to his awareness of the cosmic order and purpose.
Thank you. Thank you. Do we have any thoughts on that before we close our meeting today? TK.
Well, you know, certainly this has been, we're happy we read it. It's been an interesting article. It gives plenty to think about, but it doesn't really give anything to do. Like, so what do I do with this? You know, I mean, we can get creative and live your life as a theosophist says, but in particular this, and what comes to mind is the article, The Function of Attention in Personal Development, is almost the instruction manual, we think, for what this guy is talking about in this article. The Function of Attention in Personal Development. It's a great article.
Well, you know, it brings to mind what Mr. Judge says. When doing something, put your whole heart into it. You know, pay attention. You know, be mindful. Sometimes I think in our modern Western world, we're so busy with the doing of things that we're not paying attention. You know, we're filling up our time. And what this brings to mind is maybe we're doing way too much and that we need to pare down our external physical activity and spend more time inwardly as well. SL and then TK, or TK, did you want to respond before SL?
Right. So yes, thank you for pointing that out. So really the point he's making is be aware of what you're doing, live a mindful, aware life. Absolutely. And in that direction, maybe that's why we brought up the function of attention and personal development is it's very helpful in the how-tos of being more mindful. So we'll let it go with that. Thank you. That's very appreciated.
Another thing that comes to mind in that, because that, when you think of development, you have to have a reason, a motive. And the motive should be a feeling of devotion of some kind in order to do that. Not to want some, and in theosophy, we talk about the self of all that lives, a feeling of devotion, or in the Bhagavad Gita, the devotion to Krishna. In whatever form or way that you can feel that devotion, gives a sense of direction to that development, to the tuning of the instruments that we occupy. Because if we're going to work, as the declaration says, to be the better able to help and teach others, we're going to need to have a vehicle. And we're going to need to prepare that vehicle so that it can do that job. SL? You have the last comment of the evening.
We began with the four golden links. That was one of the initial points. And an extension of that is the third fundamental idea of our evolution being self-induced and self-devised. So sometimes the best theosophical advice is to give the general ideas, but leave it up to each individual soul to figure out through their self-awareness what they will specifically do to become more self-aware, how they will apply it, because depending where we are, that will be different for each of us.
Difference is also very important, as Jane Goodall pointed out too, that each one of us in this cosmic solidarity, in this human solidarity, has an important task to perform. And, even the great teachers, they're not all the same. They are all performing different tasks and have different personalities, even, and different vehicles. And they come at different times. So, and we are a link in that chain as well. So, thank you, everyone. Happy New Year. See you next year.